as he did with birds and lizards, and drawing their insides. It was interesting in a peculiar way.
"Is something wrong?"
Master Cosmas asked, his bright blue eyes worried.
"Have I loaded you with too much? Several of your masters say you are outpacing what they planned for you this term."
Aram smiled at the kind older man. Cosmas often checked to see how he was doing, slipping Aram a handful of sweets or an interesting book in addition.
"No, sir, I'll be fine. I'm 12 now, you know."
Cosmas's eyes danced. As head of the school, he had access to Aram's records. He knew Aram's true age, but he never let on that he did.
"I believe I gave you a birthday present at the time," he replied seriously. "But you appear concerned."
"Oh, I was only thinking that Varys will fuss over me working with fish and shellfish. She'll make me change clothes before supper, probably."
Cosmas chuckled and looked up as the university's bells chimed.
"There's the hour. I'll walk you to mathematics. I have no doubt that she will do exactly that," he said, continuing their earlier discussion. "She is very precise. Did you expect her to make a fuss over your cutting up animals?"
"I did a bit when I started with birds and reptiles," Aram confessed. "But she was assigned to teach me how to do it. She's very good at it."
Cosmas nodded.
"It's her experience as a cook," he murmured. "It makes her the most nimble-fingered student in this academy."
He looked at a group of rushing young students and called,
"You will get there in time. Proceed at a normal pace."
One of them squeaked at the sight of the headmaster. They promptly obeyed, swerving to the opposite side of the corridor from Aram and his intimidating companion.
"Truthfully, I was never so happy as when Varys and Ozorn took you up," Cosmas went on. "Varys has been a wonderful friend to Ozorn. She brought him out of his shell after his father's death. But they both drew away from the school at the time. They turned inward, associating largely with one another. Now they have taken a liking to you, and it has made them more sociable. Introducing you to the university has gotten them to be a part of it again."
Aram remembered that upon his new placement, the three of them had usually sat alone. Then slowly others decided to become part of their small group. Now new students joined them for meals, study sessions, and explorations in town. Ozorn, who used to talk largely to Varys and Aram, did so now with the others, if not as much.
"But why?" Aram inquired. He couldn't decide if he meant, "Why me?" or "Why are you telling me?"
"Some special thread among you three," Cosmas said quietly. "It is not only that you are the most rapidly advancing students in the lower academy, either. A thread that has brought you together, perhaps. Here is your class."
He left Aram standing in front of the room.
"Good luck!"
For the first week of the term, Aram tried to observe his two friends, looking for that special connection. But if it was there, he didn't see it. He watched them so intensely that others noticed. One day at lunch, a schoolmate joked,
"What are you, in love with Ozorn? You goggle at him enough."
Aram gaped at him. Then he snapped,
"Who invited you to sit here?"
Ozorn led the laughter from the others and slung his arm around Aram's shoulder. Varys did the same from the other side and told Aram's tormentor,
"If you can't be witty, you may seat yourself somewhere else."
His cheeks flaming red, the boy gathered up his things and left the table. One of the others left with him. Varys and Ozorn released Aram's shoulders, each with a firm squeeze. Aram lowered his head, smiling and teary-eyed at the same time. They were such good friends.
"That was unkind," Ozorn said. "I didn't know you had it in you."
Aram glanced up. Ozorn winked at him.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude," Aram explained.
Varys patted his arm.
Nonsense. You are far too polite. Since we can't hit bullies without getting into trouble, we learn to say cutting things.
To start with, Ozorn added.
You're always joking, Barise said, crinkling her nose. May we please finish our meal? Cosmos was right. Aram could handle the combined sigils and writing classes, which Aram considered to be a blessing. Fish and shellfish anatomy was as difficult as birds and reptiles, though his ability to sketch improved week by week. He even found himself making idle sketches of people and plants when he was daydreaming. He was so busy that it was a month before he noticed that Ozorn was escaping their lunch group several times a week to eat by himself. All of them did it now and then. The pace of schoolwork was so intense that sometimes it was necessary to find a corner to oneself. Ozorn had done it before, but this was more frequent. He also talked less once he put his bedtime lamp out as February wore on into March. At study times, they all talked only when they needed help with a problem. Aram noticed no difference there, but he felt snubbed when Ozorn replied briefly to anything he said and turned away. One Friday night, Aram asked, "Do we have plans for tomorrow?"
"No, I do not have plans, and I do not want to join in plans."
The boy on the other side of the wall snapped.
"How many times can you look at the same stupid vendors and the same stupid animals? Just leave me be."
Aram trembled at the sharpness of the reply to a perfectly ordinary question. He hugged his pillow to his face and tried to think of a proper retort. All those he considered were too extreme, too rude, or too childish. He was still considering mighty retorts when he heard a deep sigh and bare feet on stone. Ozorn pulled out Aram's chair.
"Are you trying to smother yourself?"
he asked.
"Go away," Aram said, his voice muffled.
He lifted the pillow to admit air and to emit his voice.
"I said go away."
"Aram, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have snapped. I don't have so many friends that I can afford to insult them. Please forgive me."
Ozorn nudged the bed with his foot.
"Please? I must be coming down with something. My headaches. I just want to stay in and sleep, understand?"
Aram wanted to ask if he'd been getting ill for 3 weeks, but let it go.
"Anything I can do?" he asked.
"No. Look, I just get a little cranky this time of year. Don't mind me, will you? Whatever I say."
"Have you any idea why you turn cranky?"
Aram asked cautiously. Ozorn gave an unprincely snort.
"Why does anybody get cross when the weather's like this, day after everlasting day? Even you. I've noticed you're forever sneaking down to the river. You come back with sand on your shoes. How are you getting out of the grounds anyway? All the gates are closed and locked at sunset, and there's guards on duty."
Aram sat up and shrugged. "There's a tree with branches that hang over the wall in the citrus garden." Ozorn smiled.
"I'm surprised old Hulak hasn't caught you yet. Stop going there, will you? It's too dangerous in the dark, especially during the winter floods. They say Enzi, the crocodile god, roams the banks looking for fresh meat."
He boosted himself from Aram's chair.
"I'll tell you what. I will try to be sociable, and you will stay away from the river, all right? It's been known to rise 4 feet in a day."
He didn't wait for an answer, but returned to his cubicle. He could be like that sometimes, thinking his requests, the ones that sounded like orders, would be obeyed instantly. Aram stared absently into the darkness. Ozorn had it wrong. Aram didn't visit the river to escape the school. He went for the roar of swiftly moving water. He loved the waves that rose there only during the floods. The bellows of hippopotamus herds and masses of crocodiles thrilled him. The river was a god, taking trees, reeds, boats, and anything else it found. And he didn't believe the crocodile god, Enzi, actually roamed the river's banks. Gods didn't just appear in the mortal realms. Someday, he would take a boat along the river's length. He would discover all its wonders and learn to use its every magic.
"Don't tell me Ozorn's not coming," Varys demanded at breakfast.
"He said he must be getting ill. He wants to stay in," Aram explained uncomfortably. He didn't think Ozorn was telling the truth, and he hated lying to Varys, even if it was just a lie he passed along. Varys led them to an empty table. She set her tray down with a crisp clack.
"Well, that does it," she said quietly. "I've been concerned for this last week."
She patted Aram's hand.
"Don't worry. There are things we can do after I attend services."
Varys was more religious than Aram and Ozorn put together, at least when it came to the temples of the university and town. Aram made the sign on his chest for luck before they both ate a hearty breakfast. It was a habit they'd brought from northern homes. When Ozorn took breakfast, he had a southern meal of yogurt, wheat or barley flatbread, a little fruit and juice. He often teased Aram and Varys that by the time they were masters, they would have to be rolled wherever they wished. It was a joke neither of his friends liked, but he seemed not to notice. Breakfast done, Varys went off to her worship. Aram wandered out the nearest side gate and to the river cliffs once again. He had to give up the road to the wharf since it was half underwater. The shaggy grass on the high ground was soaked. So were his breeches by the time he reached the heights that overlooked the Zekoi. The view was better than it was at night. At night, he mostly listened, half entranced by the sound of nature out of control. On his rare daylight trips, he observed the waves that rose in normally flat waters, waves that tossed up spume like those at sea. He counted the whole trees and dead animals that passed, bracing himself against the grief of the animal's loss by telling himself there were sacrifices to the river god. He knew the farmers sacrificed to Zekoi, since the god provided the water that flooded their fields, bringing rich mud that sired bountiful crops. It made sense that the plants and creatures of the lands would do the same for their water and food. Dwelling on these and other ideas, he lost track of time. When he came around, he was caught in the middle of a cloudburst. The gate guard laughed as the dripping boy passed through. Aram pretended not to notice as he trotted back to his dormitory. It was a relief to shed his soaked tunic and sandals next to his door. It was much less of a relief to walk inside his room clad only in his loincloth, also soaked, and hear Varys talking quietly to Ozorn.
"Aram?" she called.
"Don't come around," he yelped, ducking into his cubicle. He scrabbled in his chest for dry clothes. His face burned despite the cold water pouring down from his hair. "First the tunic for cover," he ordered himself, "then a towel for my head, and a dry loincloth." He looked down. He had donned an old blue and orange tunic that was now far too short for his legs and arms, even for a northern student. "Stay there!" he commanded, more panicked than ever.
"Whatever you're doing, do it anywhere else," Ozorn commanded, his voice weary and vexed. "I said I wanted to be left alone. Are you too hard of hearing?"
Aram produced long breeches and yanked them on. Decently covered, if not attractively, the breeches were tan. He looked into Ozorn's cubicle. Varys sat on the floor near the opening, a book open in her lap. When she turned her head to gaze up at Aram, she began to giggle.
"Ozorn, look! He's wearing a turban," she joked. "I didn't know you were visiting the Urgwe tribes this morning."
"I wish he'd taken you with him and stayed there," Ozorn snapped. Don't you know the meaning of go?
Not when you say it, she replied pertly. And Aram just lost his ability to hear it, didn't you?
She gazed up at Aram, patted the floor beside her, and mouthed, sit down. Aram looked from her to the mound of pillows and blankets that was Ozorn. He'd never had to choose between them, nor had he gotten commands from both of them. He picked the middle road. Yanking the towel from his sodden curls, he scrubbed his hair.
Great Mother, what happened? Baris demanded. Did you take a nap out there? And what happened to your feet?
Aram glanced down. Mud oozed between his toes and down his shins. The river heights are a little soggy, he explained. He went out to the gallery, where the servants kept a rinsing bucket. He cleaned off the mud, then returned to mop his floor. Varys waited for him to finish, a wicked-looking comb in her hand. Aram balked.
That's going to hurt.
There's a little of Ozorn's scented oil in it.
Will you two go?
A sandal flew over the barrier between the beds and struck Aram's chair. Aram backed up against the door.
I don't want smelly substances in my hair, particularly not Ozorn smelly things.
Varys walked by and recovered the sandal. She whispered, keep it up, he's getting livelier. In a louder tone, she added,
don't be silly. Oil makes hair easier to untangle.
Aram drew breath for another protest, never taking his eyes from the menace of the comb. Without warning, the door swung open and knocked him forward to his knees. He virtually tackled Varys. She fell onto her rump with a shriek.
What in the divine realms is going on here?
Demanded Master Chioke. Although he sounded shocked, he still calmly shook water from his hands and satchel onto the two young people. His long black hair, pinned back in twists of braided gold chain, was perfectly dry, as were his feet. Disgruntled, Aram guessed that the master must have left waterproof boots and a cloak hung in the gallery outside.
Student Varys, you are not supposed to be here,
Chioke informed her sternly. He stepped past her and Aram. Varys struggled to rise. Aram reached out and helped to pull her arms so she could stand. Carefully, he fought his own way upright without falling onto her again. Varys curtsied.
I have permission from the housekeeper, Master Chioke, she said demurely, gazing at the floor.
Aram knew that tone and downward look. She was furious that the master had knocked them down without helping them to rise.
I told her that Prince Ozorn had missed the morning meal, so I brought him juice and food. I was reading to him from one of our lessons when Aram came in. Wasn't I, Aram?
Aram nodded.
Ozorn was telling us to go away. I'm sure he'll tell you to go away too, Master, he said, all innocence.
Ozorn had told him once that Chioke said he thought Aram was talented, but perhaps a little simple.
Ozorn tells everyone to go away, he added in the face of Chioke's suspicious glare.
Ozorn sprang up from his heap of blankets.
I do want you to go away, all of you. That's the thing about this poxy, deep-fouled place. A fellow can't get any quiet.
He raised a hand that held his other slipper.
And don't look daggers at me. You don't know what...
Chioke stepped around Aram and Varys, removing his satchel from his shoulder. Ozorn abruptly fell silent.
I am surprised by you, Prince Ozorn, the mage said quietly. Your royal mother would be most distressed to hear you speak to friends in such a manner, particularly when they act only from concern. I hate clinging, Ozorn muttered.
He glanced at Varys and Aram.
But I'm sorry. I've just been itchy of late. Itchy and cross and sleepy.
He glared at Chioke, who took a flask from his satchel and removed the top. It was a small cup.
And what's the use?
Ozorn continued to rant while Varys clung to Aram's arm.
I'll get sucked into palace business anyway. I'll never get to be a mage. They'll put me in the army. I'll be cut down, just like father.
His voice was rising. Chioke deftly pulled the cork that plugged the flask and poured a small measure of liquid into the cup. Aram could see the liquid shining brightly in the journey from bottle to cup and in the cup itself. Chioke offered the shimmering vessel to Ozorn.
Drink, your highness, he told Ozorn. All will be well.
You aren't bespelling him, are you? Aram asked, despite his own caution around masters.
We aren't supposed to take any cantrip unless given by the healers.
You dare?
There was danger in Chioke's voice.
Just because you have dazzled a handful of soppish mages does not mean I will permit you to question me.
Varys covered Aram's mouth with her hand.
No, master, please, he doesn't understand. Please don't be angry, she pleaded.
Then get him away from here and explain, before I teach him the respect he owes a master who will not coddle him,
Chioke ordered. Aram protested, but Varys dug both hands into his arm. That was when he discovered that her beautiful fingernails were not only for decoration. Wincing, he let her tow him out into the corridor.
But my clothes, he protested. Proper clothes, and he isn't supposed to...
She had clapped a hand over his mouth.
Will you be silent and let me explain? She demanded. My goodness, Aram, but you do clack on sometimes. Master Chioke is Ozorn's personal master.
Aram peeled her hand away from his face.
But it's only the ones that show great promise who get a personal master, he reminded her. And that only in their last years at the Upper Academy.
Varys sighed and leaned against the wall.
Ozorn is different. His mother and the Emperor weren't going to let him return here at all after his father...
Aram nodded. She meant after his father had died.
Master Chioke stepped in and said he would be Ozorn's personal master, even though he's too young. He's doing it for Ozorn's family.
Aram scratched his head.
But he's a fire mage, not a healer.
Varys shrugged.
I suppose he got the medicine from healers, or Ozorn's mother. Take my word, those two treat Ozorn like gold.
Aram looked at his door.
So now what do I do? You take these clean clothes.
The housekeeper, Irafa, stood in her open doorway. She offered a set of his clothing to him.
How long had she been there listening? Aram thought, horrified.
Silly? She has to know about Ozorn, with him in her care,
Varys said, guessing what Aram thought. She asked Irafa,
May he change in your room? I don't believe Master Chioke wants to be interrupted.
Irafa waved Aram into her quarters and closed the door behind him. When he returned, he found her talking with Varys. As soon as Aram handed his dreadful clothes to the beckoning Irafa, Varys said,
There's a glassblower down the way who makes all kinds of things you wouldn't expect. Do you want to go see? He's under the arcade outside the gates, so we won't get wet if we wear hats and cloaks.
They returned from a fine afternoon of shop visiting and talk to take an early supper. Then, carefully, they looked in on Ozorn. Chioke was still present, reading in Ozorn's chair when they entered the room.
Very good, Chioke said, getting to his feet. Irafa told me you were out. I want you both to know that he will sleep another day, maybe two. He has a cup and water beside his bed, as well as fruit and bread should he get hungry.
He turned back and blew out the candle he'd been using.
However, I doubt he will wake. Send a messenger for me if you are here when he does. I am in good hopes that the medicine will do the trick in restoring his normal state of mind.
He nodded at them, gathering his things, and left without bothering to close the door. They both looked in at Ozorn, who was once again a lump of blankets and pillows. Varys tiptoed over and rearranged the pile so her friend's nose poked into the open air. Then she turned to Aram and shrugged.
"He's the master," she said with resignation. "I suppose it's just you and me for breakfast for a while, then."
She waved and left Aram, closing the door behind her. 2 days later, they were surprised at supper by a cheery Ozorn.
"It's still raining," he announced, as if he hadn't been dark and gloomy for weeks. "Anyone want to race paper boats down the corridors?"
Aram and Varys both sighed in relief. Aram never remembered to ask Varys if she had seen the glow in Shioke's medicine. The Imperial University of Karthak, the School for Mages, the Lower Academy for Youthful Mages. Schedule of Study Summer Term 436 HE. Student, Aram Draper. Learning Level, Semi-Independent. Breakfast, Third Morning Bell. Morning Classes, Gems and Stones. Four-Legged Animals, Anatomy. Language, Urgway. Lunch, Noon Bell. Afternoon Classes, Protective Circles, Cosmos, Ozorn and Varys. Illusions, Objects, Dagani, Ozorn and Varys. Basic Spellcraft, Monkey, Orangutan, and Gorilla Anatomy. Supper, 7th Afternoon Bell. Extra Study at Need. Chapter 5. June 1st to 4th, 436. Students were rejoicing in the lazy week between the spring and summer sessions when Aram was summoned to Master Cosmos's office. He went nervously, wondering what he might have done. Cosmos was smiling when his assistant ushered the boy into the master's large office. He waved Aram to a seat and surprised the boy by taking a chair next to him.
"Well," the master said cheerfully, "you lived to the summer term. That wasn't so bad, was it?"
Aram turned possible replies over in his head. He rejected complaints about long hours of study and having to give up expeditions into town. Finally, he said, "I like the more complicated magics, sir." Cosmos nodded.
"It's a very good thing we are pursuing this course of study with you, then," he said gravely. "I know it's a great deal of work. It leads to more difficult courses in the Upper Academy, too. Still, they will keep that busy mind of yours happy, as they will those of Ozorn and Varys. You three won't be bored. Exhausted, but never bored."
He smiled cheerfully at Aram, who found that he was smiling back.
"Now,"
Cosmos went on, reaching for a document and an apparently heavy pouch that were on the corner of his desk.
"I have had correspondence with your mother and grandfather over the winter, through the Council of Mages in Tira. We have come to a different arrangement with them as regards your education."
"Sir?" Aram was puzzled.
"You see, it is impossible for us to educate you properly, as your talents demand, while asking for varying amounts of fees from your family to cover materials and books, depending on what you must study in the coming terms,"
Cosmos explained.
"Even if they approved each course of instruction, and there are some that have refused to allow their youngsters to take certain classes."
Aram grimaced. Last autumn, Varys's father had ordered that she was to have no more classes in cooking magic, calling it nonsense. Princess Mahira had forbidden Ozorn to study the part of a history class that covered the end of slavery in the northern lands. She said it was seditious poison and threatened to complain to the Emperor. Aram had always worried that his own family might not be able to afford his education in a bad year, but he knew they would never forbid a particular class.
We will not allow your schooling to be vulnerable. Thus,
Cosmas offered the parchment to Aram.
This states that your education from this point onward, supplies, housing, and class fees, is assumed by the university. On the first day of the interval between terms, you come to me. I will give you a clothing and spending allowance. Here.
He gave the pouch to Aram.
Your books and supplies will be delivered to your room, just as Ozorn's are, the day before term begins.
He leaned back and folded his hands on his small round belly.
A paper inside that pouch explains everything, including your classes for summer term.
He smiled.
You appear dazed.
Aram drew a shuddery breath. He was a little dazed. My parents, he murmured.
They have agreed to everything,
the headmaster reassured him. Aram peeked into the pouch. It was heavy with silver thaki coins.
New summer garments first,
Cosmas advised.
But buy yourself something. Several somethings, in fact. You've worked hard. Perhaps let Varys do the bargaining when it comes to clothes.
Aram looked at Cosmas. I don't understand, he said, baffled. Why me? What did I do that day in water magic that makes me worth so much attention? Cosmas sat back in his chair.
Actually, we do this for others, students with talent who don't have wealthy families. But, great Mithros, did no one tell you?
Aram shook his head. Not really, sir. Cosmas rubbed his forehead.
Lad, however you did it, you reached through the floor, through the foundation of the building, and deep into the earth, breaking through the protective shield under the university. Then you gathered water from the lake beneath us, miles below. If Sibo and I had not stopped you, you might have flooded the entire building. What occurred is called a flare. It happens with young mages who will manifest great strength once they mature. You may have other such flares as time goes on. We are watching for them now, and your masters are stronger than most. Youngsters with your potential and your intellect are worth extra trouble.
Aram felt his cheeks go hot with embarrassment. Cosmas had to be mistaken, though certainly Girasunika had not drawn the water into the dish. She had not forgiven him after all this time, but glared at him whenever they passed each other in the halls. I hope I live up to your plans for me, he finally said shyly.
Don't worry about it,
Cosmas said, rising to his feet. Aram understood that this uncomfortable meeting was over, and scrambled up, only to trip on the leg of his chair. Cosmas caught him as he pitched forward and set him upright, chuckling.
There you go,
he said, as Aram got both feet under him.
You've grown enough that it must be difficult to keep track of your legs, eh? Now, study hard. Oh,
Cosmas tapped the purse.
And I would leave most of that with the bursar. Draw out what you need when you wish to shop. Run along. Don't waste your week off.
Aram went, with an assortment of thank yous. His first stop was, in fact, the office of the Academy's bursar. The purse felt conspicuous on his belt. He was glad to hand all but 15 thakis over to the clerk, accepting a receipt for the rest from her. He was wandering back to his room, considering what to do next, when Ozorn found him.
I've been looking for you everywhere, the older boy exclaimed, clapping Aram on the shoulder. My lady mother has sent my allowance for the month. Let's find Varys and go into town. What do you say?
Master Cosmas said I need to buy clothes, Aram mumbled, looking down at his knee-length breeches. Ozorn tugged on his own tunic hem. It was supposed to come to the tops of his calves and only covered his knees.
It seems you aren't the only one who needs a new wardrobe, and quickly. I wager we'll find Varese with her kitchen friends. Come along.
The afternoon was fun once they finished the dull work of choosing cloth, being measured, and bespeaking new clothes at Varese's favorite tailor. They prowled the booksellers, finding more than a few volumes they could not do without, ogled the jewelry sellers' booths, watched jugglers, and attended the latest play. After a wonderful supper, they were on their way out of the market when Aram saw a pastry seller's cart and halted.
"I have to do it," he said, digging a coin from his depleted purse. "He has Tassin pastries, those three-cornered ones. Do you want Tassin to take back with you? He has poppy, and it looks like apricot."
Ozorn's hand clamped on his arm.
"Don't," he said fiercely. "Look at that seller, the blue head cloth and the star pendant. He's a filthy Sirajit. He probably put dung in them, or piss. We don't buy from Sirajit pigs."
Aram didn't protest. By now he had learned that Ozorn could not be shaken from his suspicion of anyone he thought was Sirajit. Aram only gave the pastry cart a yearning look as Ozorn pulled him away. Passing, he could see the vendor stood straight, holding on to his pride in the face of the student's snub. Once they reached the university, Ozorn stalked off, leaving Aram to escort Varese to her room. At her door she told him,
"Don't do that again. Not if you can help it. You can see how it upsets him."
"I didn't even know those cakes are Sirajit things," Aram protested. "Mother bought them all the time. This was the first I've seen them since I came here. Of course I won't upset Ozorn, but the poppy seed ones are so good."
Varese grinned. "I love the apricot ones. I tell you what, I'll ask one of the cooks to get some, and we'll just hide them from Ozorn."
Aram gave her a coin large enough to buy a number of pastries.
"You are wonderful, Varese," he told her gratefully.
"I know," she replied, twirling before she entered her dormitory. Aram began the walk to his room, thinking about what a good friend Varese was. It wasn't long before, to his dismay, his member added its opinion, if not of his pretty friend, then of girls in general. Fortunately, his shopping satchel covered the bulge in his breeches, and the inconvenience shrank by the time he reached his room. 2 days later, he and Ozorn went star-watching with permission from the housekeeper. They lay head-to-head on the stretch of green behind the menagerie buildings, where most torchlight didn't reach.
"I saw the strangest thing the other day," Aram began. "This fellow was at his desk, and his...
This was his best friend, and he couldn't even say the word.
Below his belt, his, manhood got large. He didn't even have his hands there."
Ozorn moaned.
"Oh, that," he said with amusement and despair. "But just a moment. Didn't you have the talk? The one they give to the 12-year-olds? No, wait. That won't be until the autumn term."
He fell silent for a short while until Aram said impatiently,
"Ozorn, what talk?"
His friend shook his head.
"I suppose, well, they teach this to the 12-year-olds when autumn term begins. You'll love it. Everyone makes noise and they won't sit still." "Really, you'd think our clever instructors would know that if you were so far ahead on everything else, you might be far ahead on this. Sometimes these mages aren't practical. Have you noticed?"
"Why? I'm not very practical," Aram reminded his friend.
"Very true. Listen, then. This fellow, the thing with his member, happens to most of us eventually. We could be looking at dirt, and it will happen, or test questions, or things that have nothing to do with canoodling. Mother had our healer talk to me about, he made his voice deeper, becoming a man, the last time I was home. We start to get wet spots on our sheets or loincloths, too.
Wet spots? Aram asked, horrified. He hadn't wet the bed since he was a baby.
Because we have sex dreams, Ozorn explained. Our members practice for the real thing. That has to be a gift from the gods. Because bedding someone is all adults who aren't mages talk about. The liquid, that's what makes babies when it's put in a woman.
Why is life so complicated?
Aram whispered.
Oh, don't fuss. We'll get to try it with a lover eventually.
Look, a shooting star.
Aram watched the stars fall, awed, wondering which god was sending a fiery love letter to another god, or even to a mortal. It happened sometimes. He'd read enough stories about it. A burst of stars passed over, drawing sighs of wonder from both lads. They were sharing a bottle of grape juice when a group of students, Ozorn's age, walked by. One of them looked toward the two boys and said something that made the others laugh before they wandered on. Aram glanced up and noticed his friend's closed look and clenched fists. Hearing the ugly thing the older boy had said, Aram murmured, "The highest mark that one will get is his certificate in tree worm magic." Ozorn snorted.
"Is that meant to console me?"
Aram assumed his most innocent tone. "Don't you like tree worms?" The prince looked at him.
"One day they'll pay for that."
He took a drink from a flask he'd kept tucked away and offered it to Aram.
"It's only elderberry wine. My aunt married in Gala, and she sends casks of the stuff to my mother for ailments."
Not wanting to seem rude, Aram tried a sip and grimaced. He handed the bottle back.
"You know they advise us not to drink or use drugs that affect our thinking. Our gifts. Elderberry isn't strong. I just like the taste. Look, are you going to turn into a dull dog?"
Ozorn shifted onto his side to glare at Aram, who swiftly denied any possibility that he would get boring. Finally, Ozorn waved him silent and asked,
"So, did you want to ask something?"
Aram took a breath, and he hoped his friend wouldn't get angry again.
"Why do some people call you the leftover prince? I don't mean to upset you, but I'd like to know."
Ozorn sat up, sighing.
"Oh, that stupid thing. When I was small, apparently I told strangers I would be emperor someday. First my father heard. He said there were plenty of princes ahead of me. Then the emperor found out."
Ozorn smiled grimly.
"He sat me on his lap before all the court and pointed out every prince ahead of me in the line of succession."
Aram frowned. "That wasn't very kind." Ozorn shrugged.
"It was honest. He said with so many heirs available, I was just a leftover."
Aram remembered something from history class. "But there aren't seven heirs, are there? One dead of a heart attack, one of the sweating sickness, your father..." Ozorn took another drink of the wine.
"My father. Someday I will build a statue to his name and place it in the Square of Heroes at the palace. You'll see."
"I believe you," Aram told him firmly. He believed Ozorn could do anything. His friend had spirit, his eyes had fire when he spoke. Ozorn gripped Aram's shoulder.
"We'll show them all, won't we? Oh, look. Here comes a whole storm of stars. It's the gods. They're telling us we'll succeed."
After lunch the first day of the summer term, Aram found that he was keeping pace with Ozorn as he hurried to class. Faris, too, was trying to keep up.
"Where are you off to?"
he asked his friends. They were close to the end of one of the open-sided galleries, next to a garden full of pungent herbs that practically threw their scent into the students' faces.
"Here,"
Ozorn said, opening the door to the last room. Aram checked the door's number against his schedule. It was the same.
"Mine too,"
Faris told him, and shoved him inside ahead of her.
"Good afternoon, you three,"
a cheerful, familiar voice greeted them, as Aram blinked away the light spots summoned as they passed from the bright outside to the shady room.
"I hope you aren't too sleepy from your meals to concentrate on your work."
It was Master Cosmas. Aram grinned. He was going to share the master with his friends.
"Be seated,"
he directed, pointing to a long table and various stools placed around it. There were three slates on the table with three small boxes. As Aram, Ozorn, and Varys took their seats, Cosmas pushed a slate toward each of them, followed by a box. Since he was closest to Varys, he opened the box before her. It revealed sticks of chalk.
"Are you settled?"
he asked. All three of them nodded.
"Draw the most perfect circle you can manage."
He clasped his hands behind his back and walked around the table, observing them. Aram broke two pieces of chalk before he realized he could just use a short piece instead of breaking more long ones. Then he and Ozorn spent time drawing curves and rubbing them out because they weren't smooth or circular enough. At last, Cosmas raised a hand.
"As you lads can see, Faris has done better by far. Why is that, young lady?"
She looked at her circle and frowned.
"When I help in the kitchens, they often put me to tracing the circles for the pastry cooks."
When she noticed the boys' baffled looks, she explained.
"All those cakes and pastries that are perfectly round, and the circles of spice on top of dishes, someone has to draw them in heavy paper and cut them out."
"Why not use round plates as patterns?" Aram asked. Faris made a face at him.
"Because the edges aren't even."
"And magic depends on perfection,"
Cosmas interrupted.
"A mage must be able to create a perfect circle on the ground, in the air, on paper or chalkboard. Anywhere. Aram, your hand wiggles."
Aram hung his head.
"Ozorn, your lines are too short, and when you begin again, you don't quite match."
Cosmas said,
"When you go to work the spell, you will either have it break free of your control, or you will have to put extra gift into evening the lines, just as Aram's spell will go everywhere. Faris, you must learn to do your circles more quickly."
She nodded. "Yes, Master Cosmas." The old mage stood.
"Now, I would like to see 9 circles of the same diameter on those slates. I fully understand you may not have all 9 by tomorrow or by the day after, but each of you must have 9 circles, all perfect, before we move onward. You may not use your gift, nor a round object."
He went to the desk in the corner and sat on the comfortable chair behind it, lacing his fingers over his belly.
"Wake me when the bells sound for end of class."
He closed his eyes. The three students looked at one another, dumbfounded at a teacher who napped during class. Finally, they returned to work. Cosmas began to snore softly. When the bells started to ring, they made noise as they gathered their belongings. Cosmas yawned and waved goodbye.
"I will see you here tomorrow,"
he told them as he struggled out of his chair. They emerged into the open-sided corridor. The sun was baking the university.
"That was instructive,"
Ozorn remarked, trying to fit his slate into his bag without smearing the marks on it. Varys watched, smiling. The inside of her bag was filled with a number of smaller bags secured together, each with a different purpose. She was the only one of the three who could find everything in her carry bag right away. "I'll tell you two what," she offered as Aram finally thrust his slate and chalk into his own carrier, wiping off most of the last hour's work. "I'll get both of you the needed materials for a cloth container for your slates and chalks. I'll even help you start to sew the proper bags. But you do most of the work yourselves." She walked into the next room, nose in the air.
"Do we have a choice?" Aram asked Ozorn woefully.
He could see what remained of the marks on his slate rubbing off onto the rough inside of his leather bag. Ozorn sighed.
"Not really, no, unless you want to pay a seamstress to do it if she has time."
He walked into the room after Varys. When Aram stepped over the doorsill, he halted abruptly, colliding with Ozorn's back. His friend was frankly gawping at their new instructor. Aram knew her as the radiantly beautiful Master Dagani, who had been so kind to him the day he'd flooded his classroom. After a long time of only glimpses of her in passing, he saw that her beauty was enough to knock a fellow breathless, as it had done to Ozorn. She wore her wavy black hair pinned up in the heat. Her thin white silk tunic clung to her scarlet master's robe. A gold-embroidered silk belt was wrapped several times around her waist, displaying a number of small vials decorated with vivid paints and gems. Aram gently kicked Ozorn and bowed.
"Master Dagani, greetings," he said,
trying to ignore Varys's soft giggles.
"Welcome to my class in illusions."
Dagani came forward and cupped Aram's cheek in her hand.
"You look far better than you did the day we first met," she said in her musical voice. "But you should take a breath and concentrate on your gift. It is escaping your control again."
Aram apologized and closed his eyes. Slowly he drew breath in and out, ignoring the conversation around him as he let the flying edges of his magic fall back into himself. He found a handful of strands had wandered out of the room entirely, an event so strange that he forgot he was in class and let his mind follow them. "What in Mithros's and Shakith's names draws my power so far from me?" he wondered as he tried to call it back to him. As he followed the strands down the corridor, past the master's classrooms, the gardens, and the student classrooms, he failed to notice that more of his power was escaping him. What he did notice was the interesting thing, the attractive thing that was drawing his magic. It sang to his gift far more sweetly than any temple or street musician. He couldn't resist finding out what it was. He would do that, and then he would retrieve his power. That was his plan. Then he struck the university's magicked wall. The power on the other side was moving. He had felt nothing like it before. It reared up, towering over the wall. It plucked his gift with claws of fiery gold. Aram fought to yank his power from it, promising himself he would meditate until strange magics would battle to get free of him. The power was amused. It released the strings of his magic one at a time, letting them whip Aram as they returned to him. Another gift, cool and silvery, wrapped itself around Aram and yanked. He flew backward, away from whatever had entangled him, past the classrooms and gardens. His last confused thought was that he was going to die. He struck something with a hard thump. Cold water trickled over his face and into his shirt.
"I was flying," he mumbled. "Did you see it?"
That soft, odd whisper belonged to Varys.
"His gift. It just flowed out of him like ink."
"It looked like the night sky with stars. I thought he was dreaming something odd again, but awake,"
Ozone murmured.
"Is he alive?"
"Of course he is alive.
That was Dagani.
Do his dreams always force his gift to manifest?
Sometimes, Ozorn replied. I've never seen it during the day before.
Did you let him know that his gift was doing things in his sleep? Varys asked.
Aurum could tell by her tone that she was displeased. He tried to wiggle his fingers to indicate that she should calm down or make Ozorn be quiet. He wasn't certain which he wanted to tell her, but it didn't matter. His fingers wouldn't move.
Why? Ozorn asked. He wasn't harming anything. And it's entertaining when I can't rest.
Aurum, my dear, your gift has hold of you,
Dagani told him softly.
Make it release you. You are the master. Make it accept your will. Otherwise, I will be forced to use stern measures.
She paused and said,
They may involve removing your shirt.
The thought of the beautiful Dagani seeing his bony chest made Aurum fling his power around the fugitive tendrils, then shove them down into his center with a strength he didn't know he possessed. Once they were subdued, sinking into the pool of his gift, he sat up, banging into Ozorn's shoulder. Dagani drew over a chair and sat on it.
You need to work on your concentration. You must not lose your hold on your power in your sleep. A greater mage might draw it from you, as a spinster draws thread from wool.
I would never, Ozorn said with a grin.
Dagani quelled him with a raised eyebrow. The prince ducked his head and busied himself in drawing up chairs for himself and Varys.
What happened to you?
The mage asked.
One moment you were with us, and then your gift broke away and your mind followed it. You collapsed.
Aurum remembered and moaned with disappointment.
I missed it. You see, there was this tremendous power outside the wall, so huge I could feel it.
Oh, please,
Ozorn said, though he was smiling.
The master didn't feel any tremendous power. You're mistaking your own loss of control.
Dagani held up her hand.
This power, did it move consistently in one direction, or did it shift here and there?
Aurum had been staring at Ozorn with hurt. How could his friend say such a thing? The master's question distracted him. There had been one strain of magic, immense, but farther away. It hadn't come near him. It was the other that had moved, approaching the gate.
It moved, he murmured. I think it was going to come through the gate, even with all the magic on it, but it stopped when you pulled me away.
Well,
Dagani tapped her full red mouth with a finger that was tipped with blue lace-like designs.
You would have learned these things in the Upper Academy as you grew more attuned to the natural world and the divine realms.
The three students stared at one another, amazed. They hadn't heard of this aspect of magecraft.
Magic attracts magic. Normally, it is not a factor, unless you are working very powerful spells. As masters, you would be taught how to ward off magics that would interfere, but there are other magics that might be drawn to you.
She rose and walked to the open door, looking outside.
The power you felt, and I know you felt it. The slow one that moves in one direction is the Zekoi River and its god. I've been feeling the itch all day. He doesn't always come this far north, but when he does, you know it.
She leaned on the doorway.
And the other that nearly caught you must have been one of the lesser gods.
Can they pass through the spells on the wall?
Varys asked nervously.
I'm not sure I want to deal with any gods, ever.
If they do,